The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see? Pick up the mirror now, America. Go ahead, pick it up. What are you, afraid? It's just a mirror, America. What could it do to you except reflect your image? The Majority Report.
It is Tuesday, March 1st, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Wonderful show for you today. We will be welcoming to the program the great Tom Tomorrow, creator, I guess, ongoing, creating this modern world. He will be here just to talk about, well, he's got a new anthology out and aptly entitled Too Much Crazy. I've spoken to Tom over the years, I don't know, maybe half a dozen times. We had him on the Majority Report, on the Sam Cedar Show, and I don't know, there was always a sense that, well, there'll be a day where it gets less crazy. But I, it hasn't come yet. And I am losing faith that it's going to get less crazy. I always said it was going to get worse before it got better. And I think that's still, sadly, true. There are some glimmers of hope, though, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know what's going to happen in Wisconsin, but I do know that Republicans are going to pay a big price for this. Scott Walker is going to pay a big price for this. Those state legislators in Wisconsin are going to pay a big price for this. You know, the conversation I had with David Dayen yesterday, who was on the ground there, I think he brings up a very good point. You know, what we're starting to see is a new coalition, a revival of a labor-based coalition, and it seems to have less to do with national Democrats than people simply coalescing around their neighbors on a state-by-state basis. And that's extremely encouraging. Pew Public Policy coming out with a full poll today. Don't have all the details. They haven't quite released it, or they just haven't gone through it. But the big one is, if voters in the state of Wisconsin could do it over today, they would support defeated Democratic nominee Tom Barrett over Scott Walker by a 52-45 point margin. Voters who are not part of union households have barely shifted at all. They reported to having voted for Walker by 7 points last fall. They still say they would vote for Walker by a 4-point margin, so within the margin of error. But households where there is no union member, voters now say they'd go for Barrett by a 31-point margin. That is double the 14-point, more than double, the 14-point advantage they report having given him in November. And it's actually Republicans that are tacking away from Walker, more so than Democrats or independents. Only 3% of Republicans surveyed said they would vote for Barrett last fall. Now 10% they say they would vote for him this time. And that's a function of Republicans who have, were either members of unions, know somebody in unions, or have a sense that working class people are getting screwed, which again speaks to the enormous value of union membership. Many times over the years, we've had many guests talked about different studies that simply show that association with unions gives you a different perspective. I mean, this is simply human nature. If you're hanging out with Tea Partiers all the time, immersed in a right-wing world of Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck, not only will you be insane after a short period of time, but You're going to vote as they tell you to vote. Union membership, you necessarily start meeting a wider swath of people, differing people, and you start seeing things from a different perspective. Big part of Scott Walker's victory in November, and sadly Ron Johnson's, who defeated Russ Feingold, was essentially Democratic voters sitting at home. This Pew public policy poll finds that likely voters had supported Barack Obama by only 3 points in 2008, in contrast to his actual victory of 14 points. In other words, there was 11 percentage points worth of Obama voters who just didn't go and vote in the last election. Well done, Rahm Emanuel. You may be able to fly into Chicago with a ton of money and win the mayoralty there, but remember, your legacy, as far as I'm concerned, will be the disarray in which you left the Democratic Party. Another poll out today. There are three major polls in the past couple of weeks showing virtually identical information. The CBS poll, 60%. Oppose eliminating collective bargaining rights for public employee unions. Only 33% support eliminating them. Where have you heard that number? Where have you heard the numbers 28%, 31%, 33%, 34%? Those numbers keep coming up over and over and over again. They're the number of people who supported George Bush when he left the White House. They're the number of people who still believe that, who subscribe to all the moral majority Tea Party. That's the figure in this country. It's not growing. It's not shrinking. Those people are somewhat eternal. They are locked in their mega churches. They are sitting there clutching their guns, buying more because, of course, Obama and the UN is coming to take them from them. George Bush was the greatest president we ever had because he believed in God. 56% oppose cutting the pay or benefits of public employees to reduce state budgets. Do you understand what I just said? 56% oppose cutting the pay or benefits of public employees to reduce state budget deficits. 56% are against the concessions that the unions in Wisconsin have already made to Scott Walker. Only 37% favor doing so. 40% would raise taxes to lower their state's budget deficit, as opposed to 22% choose decreasing public employee benefits. There is a 8% net favorable view of unions across the country. 33% have a favorable view, 25% have an unfavorable view, the rest, what's a union? Is that something to do with Charlie Sheen and those two girls? Democrats and independents are more likely than Republicans to oppose cuts to public employee benefits. 45%, including 59% Republicans, say that those trying to reduce the benefits are motivated by reducing budget deficits. 41%, including nearly half Democrats and independents, said the goal was actually primarily to weaken the power of unions. This is where unions really need to make the case, and where we need our media to report the reality of this. I mean, we saw that one thing that fake coat call to Governor Walker proved more than anything else. Governor Walker didn't talk about reducing the deficit. He didn't say, we'll get this deficit reduced. Don't you worry, Taskmaster. Don't you worry, sir. We're going to get this deficit reduced. No, we're doing this for freedom. We're getting rid of the reunions for freedom. That's the takeaway from that call. And, you know, like, one of the things that really, you know, and I understand there's a certain game playing here, but so many commentators made an issue of, when Scott Walker said, we thought about that, putting troublemakers into the crowd. We thought about that, but we didn't think it would work in our favor, so we didn't do it. I don't believe Scott Walker thought about that. I believe he is so in the pocket of David Koch that David Koch could have said, hey, don't you think that maybe what you should do is, take huge dildos and put them on sticks and march around the Capitol and rub them with garlic, and if you shake them in front of the Union people, they'll melt. Scott Walker would have gone, yeah, actually, you know, yeah, we thought about that. We just couldn't find a supplier who wasn't union-based to buy all those sex toys. This guy is so subservient to the Koch brothers that he would agree with anything the Koch brothers said. Freedom, freedom, we're doing it for freedom. We've got freedom dildos, and we've dipped them in garlic, just as you have asked, Herr Koch. I've got one. I've got one right now. I've strapped it onto my back. That's the real story. That's the real takeaway from that. Poll found an overwhelming, this is coming from that New York Times poll again, 71% of Democrats opposed weakening collective bargaining rights, but there was also strong opposition from independents. 62% of them said they opposed taking bargaining rights away from public employee unions. Phil Merritt, a retired property manager from Crossville, Tennessee, who identifies himself as, an independent, explained in a follow-up interview why he opposed weakening bargaining rights for public workers. I just feel they do a job that needs to be done, and in our country today, if you work hard, then you should be able to have a home, be able to save for retirement, and you should be able to send your kids to college. Most public employees have to struggle to do those things, and generally both spouses must work. These public employees, they're evil. They want to take their $50,000 a year, and they want to spend it lobbying Congress, or they want to buy a congressman, or they want to just give it all away to Libya, or support a caliphate by maintaining Social Security. Of course, that's why people get public sector jobs. Even though study after study after study shows control for education, they get paid less. It's possible some blue-collar workers get paid slightly more than they would in the private sector. That's horrible, isn't it? How can we compete with Saipan? How can we compete with those sweatshops in China if our blue-collar workers, if there's any type of upward pressure on their wages? Look, I still contend. I think what Wisconsin should do, and Scott, well, I don't know why he hasn't presented this. And maybe it's simply because David Koch hasn't suggested to him. But there is no reason why they don't enforce a mandatory maximum pay on workers there, maximum ceiling, $7 an hour. You cannot be paid as a blue-collar worker, as a service industry employee. In fact, anybody who does not already make, let's just say, $75,000, $80,000 a year in capital gains, anybody who doesn't meet that threshold, you have a maximum hourly wage of, let's just call it $6. Can you imagine how competitive Wisconsin would be? I mean, two-thirds of their corporations already don't pay taxes in Wisconsin. Two-thirds of their corporations pay no taxes. So obviously what you need to do is eliminate, you should outlaw pensions. You should outlaw pensions and any pay above $6 an hour. Now, people should have the right to pay somewhere between $2 an hour and $6 an hour, or let's call it 50 cents. and you will see Wisconsin, the economy, just explode. Businesses will move from, gosh, they'll probably move from those sweatshops in China. Get rid of the child labor laws. Folks, we really need some shared sacrifice. And so for all you people making over $5 an hour, it's time for you to sacrifice. Got a lot more to talk about today. How big a douchebags the Republicans in the House are. Just pure on douchebaggery. Not just their normal douchebaggery, but a hyper douchebaggery. Like a giant's douchebag. Some important environmental stories, including that fracking story. And David Koch. Not to be outdone, and I believe it is the real David Koch, wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post. Shorter version goes like this. We'll do the longer version. The shorter version is, I'm a huge hypocrite. Hypocrite. Maybe hypocrite is actually functional, too. I'm a huge hypocrite, and I actually think this is going to make Scott Walker look good if I come out in full blazing support of him. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Tom tomorrow. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a real pleasure to bring back to the show. He's been he was on MR1, as we call it. The great Tom Tomorrow of this modern world. Welcome to the program, Tom.
Hey, thank you.
So, first off, I know I have at the very least tweeted this to you, but my daughter loves the very silly mayor.
Oh, thank you very much.
This is Tom's book for kids. I mean, parents enjoy it too. I enjoy it, but it's a great book. And so, if you have children, I mean, I started reading it to her when she was probably like 4, and she still enjoys it now. It's 5 and a half.
Yeah, well, that's about the age range for that book. I think somewhere, you know, 3 or 4 to about 6.
I hope that doesn't mean that she's not developing well.
No, I'm sure she is with you as a dad.
I appreciate it. And your latest book is Too Much Crazy, which is an aggregate, obviously, of your tell me about that. From when to when?
It's the weekly cartoon from roughly a few months before the last presidential election, up through about I'd have to go back, but you know, like last fall, let's say.
You know, when I saw the title of your book, I just remember our conversations back in like 2004 or 2005, and I distinctly remember you saying, like, you know, it's sort of a drag to be a cartoonist in this era because it's so crazy that you can't do nuance anymore.
Right.
And we were talking about how, well, hopefully someday we'll be able to get back. We haven't gotten there, have we?
Well, I mean, I think partly what I probably meant by that, by nuance, was that it's easy in a, particularly in a Republican administration, to just get focused on these big issues, these big crazy issues, like, you know, that we were all dealing with at that point, you know, the Iraq War being the thing that springs to mind. But it's kind of still that way. Like it's, you know, the nuance is in, to me, the nuance is in the fact that Obama is constantly enabling all the craziness.
Mm-hmm.
But each week when there's major crazy or Democrats enabling crazy, it's kind of easy as a cartoonist to go with major crazy.
Right, of course. That's the low-hanging fruit, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah, well, except that it's also important. I mean, these things shape the debate. This week's cartoon is about the ways in which, you know, the Tea Party and the Republicans have entirely the terms of the debate. So we're all talking about how the deficit is the worst thing ever, and we've got to address the deficit, and you know, there's nothing else that matters, and that's just, you know, they're just very good at that.
But do you think? I mean, I'm looking at the cartoon actually right now. But I mean, do you think the Tea Party? I mean, I think they've definitely helped shape this debate. But I mean, I have a stack of articles here that talk about Moody's, that talk about Goldman Sachs, that talk about every economic analyst in the country that is sort of nonpartisan and does this sort of as a technocrat. They all say there is total unanimity that cutting the budget cuts that are being proposed by the Republicans will cost anywhere from 500,000 to 1 million jobs, will take a will throttle back the economy. But yet it's the David Gregory's out there and the Thomas Friedman's and even the, you know, the Joe Klein's and the, you know, these are the people out there who are really enabling this narrative in some way. And the Tea Party ends up being like some type of like sort of a beard.
Yeah, that's a good point. I can't disagree with that. Yeah, it's really just stunning to watch people actively act against their own interests. And that's what's been very interesting about the situation in Wisconsin. It's been a long time since we've seen people out protesting in favor of their own interests rather than in favor of the Koch brothers and the wealthy and so on.
It's absolutely true, and it's encouraging somewhat. Now, I wanted to also ask you about, did you hear about, because I think Rumsfeld has been, I mean, I think over the years, just give me your sense of it. I don't know, did you hear that Louis C.K. interview with Rumsfeld?
You know, to be honest, speaking of the 2004 and that time, I really sort of deliberately avoided Rumsfeld. I felt like I, over the past decade and some, have said everything I have to say about Rumsfeld. So, no, I sort of tuned that out.
Oh, well, it turns out Louis C.K. was asking him on live radio, I guess, if he was a lizard.
That's great.
And weirdly, Rumsfeld never denied it.
That's very funny.
I wonder if there's anything to that, if lizards are actually able to deny that they're lizards. Maybe that's their
point. That entire administration was, you know, certainly a gift to cartoonists, if nothing else. I mean, Dick Cheney alone provided enough material to keep me going for several years. You know, not that I miss any of it, but it did provide a wealth of material.
So what is your favorite target now? Would you say teabaggers or?
No, actually, I mean, I don't even feel like I go after them all that often. I think they're an important and rising phenomena, but just seen through this sort of lens of how of politics overall, of how people can be manipulated into voting against their own interests. I mean, why on earth, this is a really basic example, but why on earth is it entirely off the table to suggest raising taxes for the wealthy? The income inequality in this country has been widely documented, and I may have these numbers slightly off, but the top 20% of people in this country control something like 80 to 85% of the wealth. The Government Accounting Office put out a study recently that says that most corporations pay no taxes. You know, Bank of America pays less in taxes than you or I do. Why exactly is this off the table again? These are the things that are really interesting, and they're getting more attention these days.
And what's the state of cartoons in this country? I know it's always been sort of it's been hit hard by the web and just in general, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, my particular niche, cartoons is a very wide phenomenon, but my particular niche is, certainly struggling. I've certainly lost some papers over the past few years, but I was just going through the list the other day just to sort of see how I was doing, because I had sort of been putting it off, not wanting to really face it, and when I counted up, I was still running in something like 70 or 75 papers, so it's still... You know, I am still sort of hanging on, maybe almost by my fingertips, or maybe have a slightly more secure grip. But it's just really, it's hard to know how it's going to shake out, because the sort of model that supported a cartoonist like me was syndication to a lot of newspapers. And I'm not sure how that model survives if everything goes entirely online.
Right. And you, of course, run at Salon and at Credo.
That's right, and also a very wonderful site called truthout.org.
Truthout.org, and you can also obviously go to the This Modern World. Tell me about Salon. I mean, do you have any sense of what's happening over there? I know they were in talks to be bought. They haven't been bought.
I am not sort of on the inside. I'm not really privy to that information, but Salon has been on the brink of disaster for about 15 years. You know, they always seem to pull it out somehow. I don't know how they do it, but they really manage to keep it going. So I have faith that they will stick around.
And can you tell me what you're going to be writing about next week?
Well, I'm sitting here today kind of thinking about, once again, thinking about the protests in Wisconsin, and just trying to settle on the angle that I know what I want to say. I'm just trying to figure out the amusing cartoon format in which to say it.
That's always the hardest part, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. I mean, you got to keep it entertaining. Really do.
Well, Tom, tomorrow, I have to say that one of the proudest moments of my radio career was showing up in one of your cartoons. I think it was about the the secret liberal conspiracy.
Yes, that's right. I'd forgotten about that.
Believe me, it's one of my crowning moments.
Well, you earned it. You deserved it. You're a charter member of the liberal conspiracy.
I appreciate it. All right, folks. Tom, tomorrow, check out This Modern World, and of course, you can see his stuff at Salon and Credo and truthout.org. Thanks. And follow him on Twitter, Tom Tomorrow, at Tom Tomorrow. All right. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. We got to take a break. We will be back in just a moment with more stories, including the Koch brothers op-ed. Right back after this. All right, we're back. Just picking up where we left off about Wisconsin. Obama to governors, don't vilify public workers. Wow, really coming out with guns blazing. really coming out with guns a-blazing. Addressing governors from around the country at the White House this morning, that being February 28th, so that was yesterday. This being a non-leap year or a leap year? What happens when you don't have the 29th?
It's a non-leap year.
Okay. It is?
Yeah, the leap is having the other day.
That doesn't make sense at all, does it? You would leap, I would think you would leap over one of the days. It doesn't matter. I believe that everybody should be prepared to give up something to solve our budget challenges, Obama said. In fact, many public employees in your respective states have already agreed to cuts. But let me say this, I don't think that it does anybody good when public employees are denigrated or vilified or when their rights are infringed upon. You know, we keep hearing this refrain over and over again. Everybody should be prepared to give up something to solve our budget challenges. What have the people who control 70 to 80% of the wealth in this country, what have they given up? What? What? They've given up crickets? Is that it? The richest people in this country have given up their crickets. Is that what I'm led to believe? Honestly, I can't think of a single thing.
Well, to be honest, Sam, we only took one trip to Aspen this year. Now, of course, we ended up going to St. Lucia, but we really wanted to get two trips to Aspen this year.
And you know what? That's even fantastical. Nobody gave up their trip to Aspen. I want to know. Oh, I got something. This story from Juan Gonzalez in the Daily News. Very smartly pegs it on Alex Rodriguez. It's the only way people read anything these days. It's about a sports person. It's too bad Charlie Sheen. I bet you, hopefully Charlie Sheen maybe would have an apartment in New York City because then maybe people pay attention to it. You know, I think the phenomenon about Charlie Sheen, I'll talk about that in the post show. Alex Rodriguez will pay virtually no property tax for a $6 million apartment he's buying on the Upper West Side. He will be billed around $1,200 this year in real estate tax for his 3,000 square foot, five bedroom penthouse with spectacular views of the Hudson River. Now, this is not going to make any sense to people outside of New York City. But I can tell you that back in the days when I was a little more flush, back in my sitcom days, I had a one-bedroom apartment in New York City that was about 800 square feet. I bought back in the late 90s. I sold it too early because I thought, there's no way real estate values could continue to increase at 10, 20%, 30% a year. But be that as may, I doubled my money in 5 years, 7 years. The money I took from selling my apartment, I bought a big house with a tract of land. I mean, not a huge house, but probably three times the square footage for the same amount of money. And so understand how expensive apartments are in New York City. 3,000 square foot apartment, $6 million apartment. Over the next 10 years, Rodriguez and his fellow residents will continue to receive huge discounts on their tax. A full tax bill would have been at least $60,000 annually. He's paying $59,000 and $800 less than he normally would. Why? Because there is a little-known tax abatement to promote the building of new condos in this city. Now, there are so many freaking condos in the city now. They have driven out so many luxury condos. And I'll tell you what happens on the Upper West Side. I know this. They built so many new units. So many new units came on over the past year that the public school that Milo is going to, there were three times as many applicants as there were room for in a public school.
Wow.
It increases class size. They add one or two people. They add a couple of classrooms. So they can't eat at the same time. Kids got to eat from 10:30 in the morning for lunch up until like 2. They can't have gym more than once a week. Oh, but at least there's new property taxes coming in. Uh-uh. This guy makes $33 million a year. He saves $58,000 on his taxes. The politicians, real estate insiders call it the 421A program. It grants as much as a 98% tax abatement for up to 25 years to condo owners in newly built housing. The vast bulk of it has gone to luxury housing in Manhattan. Though a few reforms in City Hall and the legislature in 2007 required at least required developers to build 20% affordable housing to qualify for the tax abatement. And affordable housing in New York City, forget about it. This year alone, this program cost the city $900 million. $900 million, nearly $1 billion. That could have paid for teachers. It could pay for firefighters. After school programs. The program ended this past December for any new construction. Still goes on for the next 25 years, though, for Alex Rodriguez. God, I hate the Yankees. But the city's powerful real estate industry is determined to get it renewed and even get it expanded. Absolutely reprehensible. Where is this shared sacrifice? And I got news for you. Not giving owners of $6 million condos, not giving them a tax break, that's not a shared sacrifice. Putting them to parity is not a shared sacrifice. Letting them not rape the city coffers, the state coffers, the country's coffers anymore, that's not shared sacrifice. There's no give back there. Well, you know, if you charge Alex Rodriguez the full tax amount on his condo, if you charge him $60,000 a year of taxes on his condo, maybe he won't buy one. Maybe he'll go to Galt's Gulch. Maybe he'll stop playing for the Yankees. Maybe he'll go play for some crappy team.
You think there's a baseball team in Galt's Gulch?
That's right. He'll go play for the Galt's Gulchers. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable what's going on in this country. And Bloomberg has the nerve to get up in front of the city like, I believe in collective bargaining. But the point is, you just simply have to hammer the unions until they lose all their benefits. You have to hammer these working people until they lose all their benefits, until they lose their pay. And we can privatize the snow plowing. That's what happened, incidentally, with those snowplows. I mean, I think I covered that when I was on, but and meanwhile, just to prove how big of douchebags Republicans are, to themselves and to the world.
You are a douchebag.
There, apparently 4 years ago, when the Democrats came in to power in the Congress, and I never even heard about this. So this was not about, like, you know, political scoring any political points or anything like that. The Democrats brought in this thing where they got rid of, like, styrofoam in the cafeteria. You know how, like, McDonald's used to put the Big Macs in the styrofoam thing, and then they switched it to paper because it was more biodegradable? And now you can actually buy, like, paper products and plastic forks. They're actually made out of like cornstarch or some other stuff that actually biodegrades. And the these douchebags in Congress, and I'm talking about
John Bonair. Foam, this is from Wonkette. Foam, they brought back styrofoam. There was a staffer email. I actually felt pretty dirty drinking coffee from a styrofoam cup this morning. I felt like I was stepping back into 1983. Well, I also got news for you. I hate, it's not even, it's gross. Foamed polystyrene is a miraculous invention that manages to be completely awful through every step of its near-eternal life cycle. It is manufactured with petroleum that must be imported from Middle East dictatorships. Toxic styrene oligomers migrate into the food it holds. It is highly flammable and produces a black poisonous smoke. And most of the 25 billion polystyrene cups tossed every year will take more than half a millennium to degrade. Trying to think, is there a quote from John Bonair? I think someone should probably look into this. But I wonder if whiskey holds up better in styrofoam than it would in one of those other. Do you think? I mean, I'm just asking. You know, maybe guy comes into his office, opens up the drawer, takes a shot of scope, right? Takes his coffee cup.
I remember when I was a child. Oh, yeah, I had these styrofoam cups when I was a child.
This is a little disturbing. Reuters reporting last week, the death toll of dolphins found washed ashore along the U.S. Gulf Coast since last month climbed to nearly 60 on Thursday. These are newly born or stillborn calves. The tally is 12 times the usual number. This time of year is calving season for some 2,000 to 5,000 dolphins in the region. They're doing studies on it. I'm sure it has nothing to do with the chemicals or the oil that was dumped into that Gulf. I'm sure it has nothing to do with it. Total coincidence. There was also 89 fully grown dead dolphins, which was also a record in that area. And remember, dolphins are at the top of the food chain. So if they're dying because of this, one can expect that you have this problem throughout the food chain.
High on a hill was a lonely goat herd, lay, hoodlay, hoodlay, hoo-hoo. Loud was the voice of the lonely...
USDA approved Monsanto, and I think I told this story, the USDA approved Monsanto alfalfa with very little debate, just immediately, across the board, and they went the full, there was three different versions they could do. They could basically sort of keep it contained, they could make sure there were certain restrictions as far as how far you could plant it away, or they could reject the growing of this. They basically gave them license, plant it anywhere you want. If it gets to, it mixes with other DNA and destroys the DNA of other alfalfa, yeah, what are you going to do? Yeah, you know, what are you going to do? That way in 10 years there's no debate about it because it's all yours because you patented this form of life. I cannot wait until when we have to evacuate our bowels. We have to say something like, "This evacuation brought to you by Monsanto," you know, just before you flush. 2 weeks before the U.S. Department of Agriculture fully deregulated Monsanto's Roundup Ready alfalfa, a senior soil, and I should say that I have concerns about GMO stuff. I don't think it's one world takeover. I think there's some argument that based upon where we're going with global warming, that there may be some stuff that we want to develop in terms of like drought resistance and whatnot. But I don't think there's been enough study or care involved in this. And this is a perfect example.
A senior soil scientist. Well, he's a scientist. He doesn't know what he's talking about. It's probably a cottage industry for him. He's probably going to make some more. Yeah, because, you know, you always succeed in this country by fighting the corporate behemoths. That's always the way that you make a lot of money. Alerted the department about a newly discovered microscopic pathogen found in high concentrations of Roundup Ready corn and soy that researchers believe could be causing infertility in livestock and diseases in crops that could threaten the entire domestic food supply. You know, even in global warming, that might be a problem. Dr. Don Huber, a plant pathologist and retired Purdue University professor, wrote in a letter to the USDA that the pathogen is new to science and appears to significantly impact the health of plants, animals, and probably humans. Whatever. I wouldn't worry about it. That sounds like, that sounds like, whoa. Take it easy. What's the big deal? The pathogen is about the size of a virus and reproduces like a microfungal organism. According to Huber, the organism may be the first microfungus of its kind ever discovered, and there is evidence the infectious pathogen causes disease in both plants and animals, which is very rare. In other words, usually you get pathogens that will cause disease in animals, or usually you get pathogens that will cause disease in plants. Disease in plants. Kudos to Monsanto for being able to create something that will jump across all living life forms. The pathogen is prevalent in soy crops suffering from a disease called sudden death syndrome and corn crops suffering from Goss's wilt disease.
High on the hill was you know, a lonely goat herd lay,
friend of mine asked me, listens to the show regularly.
Now it was the voice of the lonely goat herd lay, lay,
what's that song? I laugh every time it comes on. What? I don't understand. What's that song? What do you mean?
A prince on the bridge of a castle.
It's the only thing that I have to hit that so I don't break down crying. If I let it play too long, then I start getting like sentimental about my daughter. And I'll start crying again. So I stop it. We've got some late breaking news. Field reporter Dorsey Shaw. Dorsey, you have some good news for us.
Newt Gingrich, exploratory committee. So he's running.
He's running.
Basically.
Wait, he's launched an exploratory committee?
David Schuster has a good point on Twitter. Is he going to be paid by Fox still while he's doing this committee? Can he do that?
I think that's problematic. I mean, I know that Al Franken left as soon as he announced that he was going to do that. Left Air America. So running a little late, but want to get to this massive story in the New York Times about fracking. I got a lot more stories to do today. Darn it, man. I'm running out of time. We've been talking about hydrofracking for a while on this program. We had Josh Fox on, who was who at that point had not been nominated for an Oscar for his movie Gasland. I'm not saying there's a direct correlation between what the Academy does and what they hear about on this program. and I don't know if Who's the Caboose is eligible, but, So hydrofracking, a well can produce over 1 million gallons of wastewater that is often laced with highly corrosive salts, carcinogens like benzene, and radioactive elements like radium. Now, we knew that. We discussed that with, and we also know that there is something called the Halliburton loophole, which allows hydrofracking natural gas companies to not reveal what it is that they're using in their hydrofracking fluid. That allows them to escape any type of EPA regulation. EPA is supposed to, you know, just keep an eye out, but they have no real authority, which is why we spoke about a couple of weeks ago investigations that were happening by Democrats and all these hydrofracking companies were saying, we haven't broken any laws. Well, they were right. They haven't broken any laws because they prevented any laws from being passed. Thousands of internal documents obtained by the New York Times from the Environmental Protection Agency, state regulators, and drillers show that the dangers to the environment and health are greater than previously understood.
Hey, what happened?
The documents reveal that the wastewater, which is sometimes hauled to sewage plants not designed to treat it, and then discharged into rivers that supply drinking water, contains radioactivity at levels higher than previously known.
Surprise, surprise.
And far higher than the level that federal regulators is safe for those treatment plants to handle. In other words, safe for people to drink.
High on a hill was a lonely goat herd, lay, od, lay,
now, I should say,
now it was the voice of the lonely
while we pause
goat
for a moment,
lay, od, lay, od,
to gather ourselves.
Oh, holy, holy, oh, oh,
the ability to glow in the dark can come in handy. Think about, do you want to have to have nightlights? Do you have a small child? Some way you wrap the child in gauze, leave a toe showing when they go to bed? Functions as a way that they don't feel afraid of the dark. There's all sorts of upshots to this that I'm sure the New York Times and the liberals over there will not even discuss. Documents reveal that the other documents and interviews show the EPA that many EPA scientists are alarmed, warning that the drilling waste is a threat to drinking water in Pennsylvania. Their concern is partly based on a 2009 study, never made public, written by an EPA consultant who concluded that some sewage treatment plants were incapable of removing certain drilling waste contaminants and were probably violating the law. Probably. The Times also found never reported studies by the EPA and a confidential study by the drilling industry that all concluded that radioactivity in drilling waste cannot be fully diluted in rivers and other waterways. You see how rivers are at fault here and other waterways? Because they're not doing their job by... Now, understand what the dynamic is here. T-Bone Pickens or whatever that guy's name is, talk about how natural gas, so cheap. It's so cheap. We've got so much of it and it's so cheap. Do you know why it's so cheap? Because they don't pay to get rid of the byproducts in a way that will not cause disease amongst human beings, that will not destroy fish and water supplies and food supplies. If you don't have to pay for that, then of course it's cheap. But somebody will pay for it, and it will be you, it will be me, it will be our healthcare costs, it'll be the kid that gets asthma, it'll be the government that cleans up the waterways. Somebody will pay for it. These are called externalities. This is how it works. It's essentially like saying, like, yeah, I took a poop, but I've got the only clothespin in the house. I don't smell a thing. It must not smell. That's essentially it. The pain is borne by society. The profits are reaped by these people. The EPA has not intervened. In fact, federal and state regulators are allowing most sewage treatment plants to accept drilling waste not to test for radioactivity. The risks are particularly severe in Pennsylvania. There are 71,000 active gas wells, up from 36,000 in 2000. The level of radioactivity in the wastewater has sometimes been hundreds or even thousands of times the maximum allowed by the federal standard for drinking water, which I think may explain why Pat Toomey won, finally, after all those years. He's been running for a long time for Senate in Pennsylvania, and I think we've shown that if you put enough radioactivity and chemicals into people's brains, someone like Toomey can get elected. In Pennsylvania, wastewater went into the Mongalula River, which provides drinking water to only 800,000 people, and into the Susquehanna River, which provides drinking water to more than 6 million people. Lower amounts have been discharged into the Delaware River, which provides drinking water for more than 15 million people in Philadelphia and eastern Pennsylvania. In New York, wastewater was sent to at least one plant that discharges into southern Cayuga Lake near Ithaca. Another that discharges into Owasco Outlet near Auburn. In West Virginia, a plant in Wheeling discharged gas drilling wastewater into the Ohio River. There were more than 493,000 active gas, natural gas wells in the United States in 2009. That's more than double the number in 1990. Gas has seeped into underground drinking water supplies in at least five states, including Colorado, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Texas, and West Virginia. Air pollution caused by natural gas drilling is a growing threat, too. Wyoming failed in 2009 to meet federal standards for air quality for the first time in its history, partly because of the fumes containing benzene and toluene from roughly 27,000 wells, the vast majority drilled in the past 5 years. In Texas, which now has 93,000 natural gas wells, up from 58,000. In 2010, it found that a 25% asthma rate for young children, more than three times the state rate of about 7% in six of the counties with the heaviest drilling. Just a coincidence. Coincidence. It's ruining us, said Kelly Gant, whose 14-year-old daughter and 11-year-old son have experienced severe asthma attacks, dizzy spells, and headaches since a compressor station and a gas well was set up 2 years ago in her house in Bartonville. Quote, I'm not an activist, an alarmist, a Democrat, environmentalist, or anything like that, Ms. Gant said. I'm just a person who isn't able to manage the health of my family because of all this drilling. Here's my advice to you, Ms. Gant. You should become at least one or two of those things. I voted for George Bush because let me shit on the people who would be preventing my kids from getting severe asthma attacks, dizzy spells, and headaches. And just say, I'm a normal American. I'm a normal American who just sits around while people dump their crap on me. And then I turn around and say I'm not one of those whiners who complain about people dumping their crap on me. So take what I say seriously. Times also found that more than 1.3 billion gallons of wastewater was produced by Pennsylvania wells over the past 3 years, far more than had been previously disclosed.
Surprise, surprise.
Most of this water, enough to cover Manhattan in 3 inches, was sent to treatment plants not equipped to remove many of the toxic materials in drilling waste. At least 12 sewage treatment plants in three states accepted gas industry wastewater and discharge waste that was only partly treated into rivers and lakes and streams. So not only are they not equipped to actually treat this water properly with all the shit that's in it, some instances they only just... can't take it out anyways, why bother giving the full treatment? Let's just pump it right back out into the drinking water. Of more than 179 wells producing wastewater with high levels of radiation, at least 116 reported levels of radium or other radioactive materials, 100 times as high as the levels set by federal drinking water standards. At least 15 wells produce wastewater carrying more than 1,000 times the amount. And industry officials say they are not concerned.
High on the hill was a lonely goat herd. Lay, lay, lay.
These low levels of radioactivity pose no threat to the public or worker safety and are more a public perception issue than a real health threat, said James Gray, chief operating officer of Triana Energy. One of the byproducts of radiated drinking water is that you develop strange perceptions that this in some way would be unhelpful for you. That's really what we have to focus on. If we could simply just get government to spend a little bit more money on dealing with perception about radiation, then I think we would have no problems. It goes on and on. A confidential industry study from 1990 conducted for the American Petroleum Institute concluded that using conservative assumptions, radium and drilling wastewater dumped off the Louisiana coast posed, quote, potentially significant risks of cancer for people who eat fish from those waters regularly. Cancer sandwich. That's what I'm going to call tuna for now on. Oh, my gosh. I have given you folks far too much free show today. Far too much. Please become a member. Please. And by all means, if you're one of those people out there, one of those corporate types pushes externalities onto others. Please, you suck up the quality of the past hour of programming. Spew your radioactive materials onto those paying members who are supporting the show. The least you can do, well, I mean, you should be becoming a member. But you should also definitely be buying all of your pro-corporate products through Amazon, through our Amazon link that you can find at majority.fm. And, oh, you know what? Tomorrow I'll read this, but I got an email. Like, somebody was like, dude, you don't talk enough about Just Coffee's tea. And then went on like an extensive email about the quality of the tea from justcoffee.coop, where you get a 10% discount, the coupon code MAJORITY. Tomorrow on the program, we will be playing the Chris Hedges interview. Really fascinating interview. And then, of course, as the week goes on, we're going to have more and more great stuff for you. It just keeps getting better and better, doesn't it? I am me at Majority FM. On the flip side, you members will be joining us on the podcast, and anybody listening live will be joining us right now. Let's go there now.
You have been listening to a podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Seder. To access more of the show on a daily basis, become a Majority Report member at majority.fm.